everyone. Welcome to Creative Therapy Umbrella, the podcast, a place where creative arts and expressive therapies are discussed through interviews and questions from listeners. We will talk about the ups and downs of therapy life, the balance of creativity, intervention ideas, and issues within the profession. Take a listen and be creative. If you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and review us on iTunes. You can also follow us on Instagram at Creative Therapy Umbrella to send in your questions for the podcast. On today's episode, I was lucky enough to interview Stephanie Level, who is the creator for Music for Kiddos. She talks today about her creative process, the different experiences she's had as a music therapist and educator, and she shares a lot of really great tips, tricks, and resources. So check her out on her social media and enjoy the episode. Okay, welcome to the podcast, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I've been so excited about this interview and just pumped to talk to you more about what you do and hearing more about you. And you're so creative. So I'd love to just dig into that today.
Oh, thank you. Let's get started. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yes. Well, to start off the creativity, I like to do it in a really fun and silly way in doing the Would You Rathers. And this was one that was posted on Music Therapist Unite by Anna. And so her Would You Rather is, would you rather lead all of your sessions a cappella or would you rather lead all of your sessions with no voice?
This one's really easy for me. Definitely easy. I would run everything a cappella. The longer I've been a music therapist, the more a cappella interventions I'm using. Mm-hmm. I love the hands-free interventions, and I've written a bunch of songs recently that have those. And I think I just like it, especially working with kids, because you have hands for like control. That's a weird way to say that. Like, I was going to say, like, traffic control, you know, you have hands to like help guide kids where they need to go. But then also for snapping and clapping and silly things like, you know, I don't know, just silly things that you can do with kids to challenge them a little bit more.
Yeah, that's so cool that it's something that you felt like you're kind of growing towards anyway, or more, you know, engage in that any more, you know.
Yeah, I actually, like, one of the things that I say in some of the classes that I've taught and things is that I love the concept of leading with your voice. Mm-hmm. And having the guitar kind of be this accompaniment instrument that is really behind your voice, but a lot of the volume, and I'm not talking like really loud overall, but a lot of the volume and the direction and everything coming from the musical cues that are in your voice. Mm-hmm. You know, so like even just starting a song with like a 5-1, you know, something like that, it can be a really strong musical cue for kids getting started and getting their attention.
Yes, I love that idea too. I feel like I was never a vocalist, and it took me a really long time to learn like how powerful your voice can be, how much you can do, how many cues you can do with it. And even one of my favorite is just the gasp of just...
Yes, exactly.
But working with little kids too, right? That's mostly from, you know, 5 and under, that all of a sudden everybody is like at attention if you gasp.
Yes, or the power of a whisper, you know.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. All the kids are like, wait, what are you saying?
Exactly, exactly. Or like with kids too, this sounds really funny, but like the power of an awkward pause with kids, like taking a song out of the rhythm of it and just putting in this space that's a little longer than rhythmically is like it's asked for and called for. And kids will just look at you and they'll be like, what is she doing? Because it's surprising, you know? Yes. That's one of my favorite ways to capture attention. It's just a little bit of a longer pause than kids expect because they turn and look at you.
Yeah, that I love that. I'm going to use that immediately. And sometimes I think I always get caught in the keeping the pauses like in rhythm, you know, but that is so expected. And then if you add an extra beat or two, it's like, whoa,
yeah, especially if it's out of like the typical 4-2 kind of like beat pattern that you have. There are a couple of songs that I do that I've recorded that I intentionally do 6 beats in a period of silence. Like I just, I'm actually going to be releasing a Halloween song in a little bit here that has a part where they fall asleep like a sloth during the song. And it's six beats of complete silence. And so you kind of feel like the song's over, but it's intentionally six beats to kind of just feel a little bit musically surprising when it comes back in.
Yeah. And how perfect and just like a great picture of a sloth is like, musically like that elicits a picture of a sloth.
Yes.
Barely moving. And then just when you think it's not going to move anymore, it moves again.
Yes. Yeah. Unexpected, a little awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's so great. So how long have you been a music therapist?
10 years. Awesome. I'm approaching 10 years and it's been a really good 10 years and oh man, so much has happened in that time.
Yeah. Well, what got you into music therapy in the first place?
Well, I was a music composition major at a college in Seattle and just found out it wasn't really my thing because I am very improvisational at heart. And so writing down, you know, composing note for note for note just wasn't my thing. I decided to transfer to Berklee College of Music for my sophomore year, fully intending to be a music business major, which I have entrepreneurship kind of in my family. And it's that's kind of not surprising for people to hear because I have a little bit of that in me. But I just thought I was going to study music business. And literally like weeks before I was going to go to Berklee and study music business, I legitimately had a dream. This is a crazy story. I had a dream. And I don't even remember what the dream was about. But when I woke up in the middle of the night, like 4 o'clock in the morning, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a music therapist. And I was like, what? Yeah, just completely bizarre. And stuff like that doesn't really happen to me. So it was really strange. And then I talked to my mentor at the first college that I went to, my composition teacher. And she said, well, duh. So what do you mean? And she said, well, because she worked in corrections as a composer and as a cellist. And so she would go take her cello and just play in correctional facilities. And she said, every single composition lesson, you just asked me about that. She's like, do you realize that's all we ever talked about? We never did any composing or anything like that. And so anyway, the second I stepped foot in a music therapy, you know, music therapy 101, I was able to change my schedule and get in there. Literally the first class, I was like, I'm sold, completely sold.
Awesome. Yeah. That's so, so great. And how funny that like your mentor kind of knew already, but like that happened for you, you know,
exactly.
Like you'll get there.
Yeah. That's a good lesson. You know, let people get there. Cause in her mind, she had been leading me in that direction. It's so funny.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I just didn't notice until I had a dream, I guess.
That's a pretty amazing way to realize it though.
Yeah. I listened.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. I do interviews in blocks. So I'll do like 2 to 3 interviews at a time. And the person I just interviewed before was also just talking about having a really intense dream that like changed part of their creative path.
And I was no way. That's amazing.
We're all on the same wavelength.
Yes, we are.
In that place today. So once you ended up getting your degree in, did you go like right through and do your master's or did you do your bachelor's or equivalency? What was that process like for you?
I just have my bachelor's. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then I did my internship at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston and with the wonderful Lori Kubicek. And really, really, really loved that internship. And every single day, I'm grateful for that experience and for Lori's mentorship because it was just really, really patient-centered and music-centered and improvisational. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience.
That's awesome. There's like nothing like, I feel like a good mentor like that. It's like they're there for life. Like, you know, you could always reach out to somebody like that and have that special bond and to especially to get that in your internship when it's just internship is such a beast and yes. It's magical. It's hard. There's just so much to it. That's awesome. Yep. Very cool. So can you tell us a little bit about what you specialize in, age, population? Yeah, a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've done quite a few things. So right after my internship, I moved to Boise, Idaho, where I'm from, and I worked on starting a hospital program at the only children's hospital in the state, St. Luke's, and was able to get that started there and was there for about 3.5 years. Really interesting process because I had to secure all the funding myself, basically. Wow. And it was very, very fulfilling and I absolutely loved it. And then right around the time my daughter was born, I just figured out it was time for me to move on to something else. And what I learned about myself in that experience was that I love building things. I love growing things from the ground up. And like right now, that program is in very wonderful hands. And right when the funding moved to being firm and in the budget and good to go and there forever, I was like, all right, what's next? You know? And which I keep thinking, like, why do I keep like doing these things for a couple of years and then like going and doing something else? And it's because I love the process of building things. So I've learned to give myself a little bit of grace for that.
That is so awesome. I feel like that's how it should be, because then there's people that, you know, do not want to do that, but then want to take something and maintain or expand or whatever. And it's like, everyone just has those unique places that we can all build on each other with that, which is so cool.
I completely agree. Yeah. And there are, you know, a couple of other programs in Boise that I started that are just going strong and going really well. And so I'm proud of that, proud of building those programs. And I am so happy and thrilled with the music therapists that are there and working with those kids. And, yes. I think that probably, I know that my thing, I worked in really all ages and all populations, because in Boise at the time there were very few music therapists. So any music, and I had a private practice, so any music therapy referral that came in, I went and saw them basically. Yeah. But my bread and butter, my absolute favorite population is kids, and especially preschoolers. I love preschoolers. I just love them. So give me a 3- and a 4-year-old and I just can't handle it. They're just so sweet and so cute and so fun to do music with.
Yes. Yes, that is awesome. My heart also lies very deeply with that age group.
Nice. Good.
There is something about it that it's just like my heart explodes from cuteness every day when you're
exactly. And that's a job, like to go hang out with those kids, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I get to go have fun with these kiddos and make music and be silly and they love it. And that's awesome. I think that's just so cool that, you know, in combination with your specialty, that building aspect is such a, I think, like thinking about who we are as therapists, sometimes there's these other pieces of what fulfills us. And, you know, that it's building things for you is really cool for people to hear, because some people might feel really validated by that of like, oh, I really feel that same way. Like, that's okay to feel that way. And somebody else coming in being like, oh, I really like to come in and expand or, you know, supervise or add interns or something, and kind of like filling our career bucket and not just in the therapeutic lens, but outside of that.
Yeah. I love the way you put that. Yeah. I think it's important to find your spot that fills you up and makes you feel good. And I had a lot of guilt when I left my hospital job, because when I started that job, it was literally my dream job. And I thought, I'm going to be here forever. And then suddenly it wasn't. And I felt a lot of guilt because I loved it. Mm-hmm. But it also, you know, it was multiple things that also coincided with, you know, I left when my daughter was 6 months old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have a child, everything changes. So, you know, so that dream job all of a sudden is like, oh, you know, life's a little different now. And I moved to a more flexible job to spend more time with her.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so nice. And I think we're also in, you know, I was just talking about this in a class that I'm taking, that our careers look really different than what previously had, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was like you have a dream job and then you go do the dream job for however many years. But like, we're just in such a different, even economic state that it's like, I think we're just kind of that generation that we have a dream job, but we only have it for 4 or 5 years. And then something we have to like adapt a lot more than anyone has ever previously had to do that before. So
yeah, I never expected I would have a mostly online business just, you know, 5 years later. It's wild to me. And it's exactly that. It's adapting to what you personally need in your life, but also adapting to technology and adapting to social media and adapting to different ways to, you know, to share resources and teach and bring in income, all of that.
Mm-hmm. There's so much to it. And there is so, especially technology, so much to adapt to.
It's absolutely
constantly changing.
Yeah.
So what does your, what's kind of like your balance of, you know, clinic stuff, online stuff, teaching? It sounds like you have a lot of cool things happening that make up your work.
Well, so I teach at my daughter's school. So my daughter goes to a small little Montessori school. So I have about 180 students at the Montessori school. So I'm a little bit leaning music ed at this stage of my life. I have lots of preschool groups. And so I do that, you know, basically one day a week. I try and get it all in one day a week, but it's kind of exhausting. So it should probably be two.
Preschoolers are really tiring.
Yes. The funny thing about that is I didn't expect that I would be doing that, but my daughter's school, we live in a small college town, and my husband is getting his PhD at Purdue. So we live in a small college town, and at my daughter's school, they couldn't find a music teacher because it's such a small town. And so here I am going, oh boy. And so I volunteered to do music in her class. And I said, oh, can you do, you know, volunteer to do music in a couple other classes? And I said, oh, sure. And, you know, in a month in or something, they're like, can we hire you? And, but the interesting thing is I'm very improvisational. I worked one-on-one mostly with kids. I did very few groups. So I walked in to, oh, a group, this is giving me nightmares, but I walked into a group of 25 preschoolers with a couple of ideas in my back pocket. And like, I don't know, like I'm an improvisational music therapist, right? And they schooled me. It was like, wow, I know absolutely nothing about groups. I, you know, and I was like, I have a lot to learn. It was like, wow, it was really shocking. So, so I started exploring and trying to learn a whole new environment for me. And so it really took a lot of time for me to kind of take my improvisational ways and be willing to plan more and be willing to have more structured, you know, sessions and groups. And that's actually why I started Music for Kiddos, which is my online company. I started Music for Kiddos because I couldn't find very many resources online for music groups and just music for preschoolers. And I couldn't quite find exactly what I was looking for. I kept Googling things like, songs for toddlers and I have, you know, my friends tease me cause I have a really low tolerance for cheesy music. And I couldn't find a lot of music. There's definitely some amazing, amazing music, but I couldn't find the amount that I needed to like fill up my sessions. So I thought, well, maybe I should just start giving away some of these songs that I am writing so that other people can use them, because they were hard for me to find and I didn't really have time to look into it and write those songs. And so I just started emailing them out. So I started, my first thing that I did is my Song of the Month Club. And that's the, my free email newsletter where I send out a professionally recorded children's song once a month. And so I just started doing that. And because it forced me to write and record a children's song once a month, because I told people I would send it to them. So, and then over time I've had a lot of songs from there.
And also I will put that in the show notes. So that will be a link that you can click for listeners.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, of course. yeah, so that's got to be like a really awesome big resource now at collectively, like all of those songs.
Yeah, there's tons of them. And I did eventually release an album of some of my favorites about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And then I was getting this huge collection of songs and videos and things like that. And so about 3 or 4 months ago, I actually launched a membership site on my website where you can join. And, but it's resources. It's all those like hundreds of resources that I've collected over the years. Mm-hmm. But it's also a membership community. So we meet and we have Zoom calls and we support each other in there. And when it opened initially, it was open to a really small number of people and it just sold out really quickly, but we're going to open it up again in January.
Awesome. Yeah. That's a great problem to have.
It's so fun. Yeah. It's really fun. The people in that group are just amazing and awesome. They're really good, community-minded people. And it's been this extra dose of support and love and ideas. And, it's just been a lot of fun. And I feel a little bit like, wow, I didn't realize that by doing this and sharing resources, I was going to get so much in return, you know, mm-hmm. get this community feeling. And it's mm-hmm. been a lot of fun.
I think there's so much to that of having that community space for, you know, support and love, like you said, and just having that connection with others. And then the ideas that come, like the creativity that, like, when you get a bunch of creative people together, just like creativity explodes, you know, like it's so different than I feel like if, you know, you're sitting in your room and you're being creative and you can like make something, but then you get people together and it's like just so many things happen. It's so awesome.
Yeah. And there's something magical that's happening too. And we're just a couple of months in, but it's kind of like, because we are a trusted community where we trust each other and we've built this trust, the ideas are different. And like just today I was seeing that people were like checking in on each other on things that happened like a month ago, mm-hmm. you know, just in their groups, you know, and how's this going? I've been thinking about you, you know, and things like that. And it's just, as we all get to know each other better, it's turning into something pretty, pretty amazing, support wise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like such a great system, you know, like a support system. Like mm-hmm. there's the roots around it that like people begin to develop. And I love that too when there's that consistent community or, you know, consistent connection between a group of people. It's like you really do, you know, think about somebody, something reminds you of them, and it's like, oh, I wonder how they did do with that. And that's so nice to have that.
Exactly. Yes, I love it. It's been so fun.
That's so, so cool. Well, it's so awesome to hear about teaching groups. And I'm still like beside myself thinking about a group of 25 preschoolers.
It's really challenged me. I'm grateful for it. Yeah, it's really challenged me. I have on my Wednesdays, I have 6 groups of 25 preschoolers each.
Oh my goodness.
It's crazy. It's really fun though.
It demands a lot of energy to do when you're leading that big of a group of preschoolers.
It does. And for me, it has really, really fine-tuned my musical transitions. Mm-hmm. That, if I could say like the one thing that I really, really had to figure out is how do we transition and how do we keep the overall arousal level of the group at a manageable level for one person to handle? Yes. You know, what is the overall like volume arc of the songs? And what is the overall like arc of the songs just in general? Like I generally do like new songs kind of at the beginning because I have this like kind of fresh energy with them. And then I do movement as they're starting to get a little bit, you know, rowdy. And then at the end, we do more familiar songs. But I even do like my movement songs. I have transitional movement songs that I use with these kids if I can see that the movement song brought their arousal level up a little bit high. Mm-hmm. I have ways to use transitional movement songs to move them to the next thing and get their overall arousal down.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's been really interesting and it's just a huge different challenge. And that's why I love sharing, you know, sharing the things that I have learned, because yeah, I've just failed so many times in there, that I feel like it should help someone, you know?
I think that's what, when you go in and you failed so hard, like that is the one shining light, is like, okay, well, when I figure this out, I'll help somebody else.
Yes, I'm going to be an expert in this. Otherwise, every Wednesday is going to be terrible. Yeah.
I wish I could think of it. It's, my memory is failing me. But there is this really great quote about failure and something about with, it's the teachable moments. All of your failures are teachable moments, are those moments. And like, that is so true. And it's the silver lining when you're in those moments.
Yes, the good stuff comes out of failure. And enduring. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And like you're, you know, all of those things, like when you're saying those little tiny moments that I feel like I didn't realize this either until I spent a lot of time in preschools doing groups with kids who are that young, that every like second counts. There is, you know, like if you're doing groups with older adults or even like, you know, teenagers, sometimes those little moments aren't as big as they are to little ones where it's like, it, there could be 2 seconds and then everybody's lost and you have to like
100%.
Yeah, yes. Like your antennas need to be up the whole time.
That is absolutely it. You have to be just ready to change your plan at any time in order to capture or keep their attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that, like sharing that. I think that is so fantastic. Cause I feel like when I was doing that stuff, I was like, well, I don't know what to do. I'll just, you know, I guess I'll just try to keep figuring something out. And, you know, and eventually it was more of just lots of failures upon failure. And then you find the right thing and it's like, oh, okay, this works. This is a good thing to keep in my toolbox. But yeah, it's great to have that as a resource too, of all of those things that you can do, those little moments, those small little transition songs, little, you know, the gasp, the whisper, all of those little things can add up to so much. It's so much powerful communication as a facilitator.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've heard again and again and again, is just this, especially this, like this age group and groups, a lot of people do it. A lot of people have kind of preschooler age groups, and it's hard to find a lot of resources for those. And
yeah.
Oh, you want to hear my very favorite preschool trick?
Yes. Yes. It's what it's all about.
Oh, okay, good. My favorite preschool trick that I about died laughing the first time I tried it on, you know, just kind of on a whim, mm-hmm. is, you know, I like to challenge kids if they're having a hard time paying attention, you know, especially as we're approaching kind of the end of the group or something, I have this sitting movement song called Move to the Beat, where it's kind of a song. It is a movement song, but it's sitting. So if they are on the verge of overstimulation or something like that, it's a really good way to get them moving, but they're sitting down. But I keep it really silly, so it's still very, very engaging and not boring at all for them. But one of the things that I tried with them is wiggling eyebrows. And it's really hard for kids to wiggle their eyebrows and talk at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
Actually, I think it's impossible if you ask like a 3-year-old to wiggle their eyebrows and talk at the same time. And it's also just so funny. Like I had the teachers, they were just rolling, laughing so hard because it's so cute. And,
oh my gosh, yes.
But anyway, you can have a group of 24 kids that are like really on the edge of being overstimulated and you're about to completely lose control of the group. And you can do something in your song that's just like, wiggle your eyebrows. And they'll be like, they'll just complete silence immediately. Yep. As they try and figure out how to wiggle their eyebrows. So that's my very favorite.
I'm definitely going to be using that. I love too that, like, what a great buy-in also for the teachers and staff, you know, like yeah. to have, I feel like sometimes it's not always that great ebb and flow with staff supporting, but then when things are just fun and silly, then like, I feel like the staff are also buying into everything, which is awesome.
Yeah. And I get lots of comments like, how did you do that? You know, and it's like, it's the music. Mm-hmm. It's those moments at the ends of songs. It's moments at the beginnings of the songs where you have the opportunity to capture their attention. And I've seen teachers use it too, you know, they'll have their kind of singing time and they'll put some kind of something at the end of the song where the kids are, you know, sit down or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's great to have them see what a tool music can be in their classroom.
Yes, to utilize that. Everybody can use it. It's fantastic.
Yep.
I have to share also you reminded me with the wiggling eyebrows of a trick that a preschool teacher taught me, or I think I saw them doing it as a way to get kids to be quiet or to walk down the hallway. That's what they were walking down the hallway. And she said, okay, everybody put your marshmallows in. And then everyone goes, and you can't see me, but I'm blowing up my cheeks and closing my mouth. And all the kids would do it in the hallway. And I was like, oh my gosh.
That is brilliant.
So I loved it too. I put it in a hello song and then I sing the remainder part of the song with the marshmallow in. So it's just, and kids have the hardest time trying to keep the marshmallows in and hum. And then they just think it's so funny. But it was another one of those things, a teacher had said it. And I was like, ooh, this is a preschool trick, a really great little preschool trick.
Oh, I love that. And it's just like begging for a s'more song.
Oh, even better.
Yes. Yeah.
And then, you know, you can go, you swallow your marshmallows. Okay. Now we can talk or something, you can keep going with it. Yeah.
I love it.
They got so creative with it. I love those little,
Yes, that's the stuff. Yes. It's just like sitting, that is the stuff that is so, so valuable. And everybody has those tricks. And I would just love to have like a collection of everybody's little tricks. It's kind of like asking a guitarist, like, what's your favorite like little trick, you know? Yes. That's my very favorite thing to ask a guitarist, because usually they have this little simple ditty that they do on the guitar that is so cool. Mm-hmm. And that's my very favorite thing to learn from other music therapists.
And those are like, I think sometimes it's really, we can miss that. Like, it's like, I need songs, and it's like, okay, well, you know, you can get your 5-6 songs that you might use for a session, but then all of these little tricks are like what makes the session flow, what makes things catchy, what makes, you know, gets a kid's attention, what makes that kid stand up. And it's those little, you know, those little riffs that,
yes,
you know, a guitarist would have, but we have as music therapists.
Absolutely. Yeah. A song is just a song, but it's all about the implementation of it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what music therapists are just so good at.
I know. Could you imagine if we had like, if there was a giant resource for the little tricks, whatever you'd call them, that would be phenomenal to like look at all that and be like, of course. Marshmallows. Like, that's fantastic ideas. I love that.
So fun.
Yes. Well, I don't know if that was I like to ask about like a really fantastic music therapy moment that you've had. And it could be, you know, something that was really challenging, but like broke through, one of those moments that you're just like, this is working. I think the eyebrows one is already but I'm sure you have plenty more. So I'd love to hear one of those.
Well, I actually have one of those music therapy moments that's like, you just can't get out of your head if you try. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's going to really change the tone here because it was in the children's hospital. But it was absolutely remarkable. And it was when I was a music therapist. I had the freedom to walk around the children's hospital and just kind of observe and go see whatever child I wanted to see, which was amazing. And I was walking in there, you know, rolling my little cart through the hospital, and I heard a child vocalizing. And it was kind of crying. It was really vocalizing. And I just felt it like deep in my heart. Like, it was like pain, 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 pain. Mm-hmm. So I beelined, you know, to his room, and he was getting physical therapy at the time. So this was a child, he was 8. He had just had brain surgery, and it had a pretty traumatic result. And he was paralyzed suddenly from surgery. And so this physical therapist was helping him move. And so anyway, I knew the physical therapist. So I looked in at her and I kind of gave her the, can I come in, you know, and she's like, please, please, please come in. And so I went in there and I just, you know, talk about like leading with your voice and vocalizations and meeting people where they are, meeting children where they are. I just looked at him and I listened to what he was vocalizing. And I did this improvisation where I, with my guitar, basically I turned his note into kind of a five, right? And then with my guitar, I went down to the one and my voice, and he was, you know, he was in a lot of pain. It was instantaneous stopping and listening. And he had been in agony for such a long time. And it was like it had been a dark room and the light had all of a sudden been turned on. Mm-hmm. And it was a very powerful experience for everybody in the room. And we just did this and he kind of sang with me and he became completely calm. And the physical therapist just, you know, quietly, quickly did the whole entire session. And when we left, you know, she was like speechless. Mm-hmm. And she said he really, 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 really needed his physical therapy. And we weren't going to be able to make that happen today. And I was about to leave. And, you know, and we got in 30 minutes, which is 30 minutes beyond what I thought we would ever get today. And, but anyway, I just, it's one of those that, you know, other music therapists will totally know what I'm talking about. It's like a little bit of those beyond words kinds of sessions where it just felt so intense in that moment and simultaneously intense and just so powerful and beautiful at the same time.
Yeah. And there's just so much in that, in those moments that happened, you know, there's with so little being said, you know, which is so beautiful. And I think that just speaks so much on the truth of what music therapy is and what it can do.
Yes, absolutely. You know, so it's like on one hand, I'm like literally jumping around and giggling with preschoolers. And then on the other hand, this is the other stuff that happens, you know, and, you know, we have such an incredible, incredible tool in music therapy. And I just feel very privileged that we get to do that with kids. We get to be there in those moments with kids, the really exhilarating, exciting, silly ones and the really hard ones. You know, what, you know what happens? You know who they call in the hospital when they don't know what else to do? Mm-hmm. The music therapist. They don't know what else to do. They call the music therapist. And we get to be there in those, you know, those families' hardest moments. It's just incredible.
Yes. Yeah. And it is like there are those moments that I feel similar. I work with children with life-limiting illnesses, but then I also work with children with special needs that don't have an illness. And there's a lot of that bouncing back and forth between like, we're having a blast to like really intense moments that are, you know, short and fleeting. And, you know, you don't know if your client's going to be around tomorrow or not.
Yeah.
And, but there's just this like, that feeling of connection, sharing that special moment with that person when you're meeting them where they're at authentically, no matter where it is, and that it's a safe space. And when you know that they feel it is like, yeah, like we've locked into it. You're here with me. I'm here with you. Let's be here together. It's just like, I don't have words for it. Maybe somebody does, but it's just, they're so special. Those moments, they're so humbling. They're so magical, sad, happy. They're just a little bit of everything. And we are really privileged.
Yeah. Oh, I love hearing you talk about that. That's really great.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that was so sweet. I loved that so much. That was a beautiful story.
Thank you.
Yes, definitely. Okay. I'm going to let that set for just a second before we move on. Okay. Well, something that came up for me that actually I was just thinking as, you know, talking about we have all these different moments of where we have this, you know, if you're in preschool and you have this high energy, and then sometimes you have to bring it down to like a really serious moment, or even if you're doing that on different days, if you're in different, if that's different weeks, years, however, wherever we are in our music therapy career, like finding that self-care balance of balancing those things. What's something that has worked for you that's been helpful for, you know, replenishing your own need in those moments?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that I haven't had good self-care in the past. Mm-hmm. And I have experienced major burnout a couple of times. And, you know, I think part of it is what we talked about earlier, where I discovered that I really do need to be creating something, you know, and I need to be building some kind of program or building some kind of business or something. And I think that that's part of it. And learning more about myself has been very good. But as far as like how I can cope better now, I still am far, far, far from an expert, far, far, far from good at this self-care thing. I'm just like a constant battle. Mm-hmm. You know, exercise, healthy food for me, like those are really important things for me. Yeah. And then like just the community, like I live in this small little town and I had to find an online community. And I made it happen. And it's been, you know, unintentionally kind of this incredible form of self-care for me.
That's awesome. That's so lovely that it, you know, something you created has this secondary benefit. That's so helpful.
Yeah. And that's what I hope for, you know, I hope for everybody in the group. And I think that's the case, you know, that it is just another place where we, you know, when you're in a hospital, you're often the only music therapist. Maybe there's a couple of music therapists, but for me, I was always the only one. You know, I was the only one in the school setting, only one in the hospice where I worked, only one in the sensory clinic where I worked, only one in the hospital. And I think it's really important that you find those people who really understand what you do. So you're not having to constantly be like, guess what happened? This is what happened. And let me tell you why that's cool. You can just like tell somebody this is what happened and they go, yeah, that's amazing.
I got it. It's so true. You're cutting out so much time and like so much of the middleman at that point of like when somebody just gets it for sure. Yeah. I think that there is so much to be said about having a community, especially there are so many therapists that are working and they're the only person, you know, or the only creative therapist wherever they are. And then people don't understand creativity and what you need to do to keep creativity happening. And, you know, just having a community where you can go be who you are around like-minded people who are also creative is just, it's like a hive. Like I always think of that analogy. It's just like a beehive where it just, the buzz happens and just so many good things come from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, it is, when this is released, it'll be, September 19th. So if you have an intervention that you would love to share, we would love to hear something, an idea, a strategy, intervention, a resource, whatever you'd like to share.
Well, I'm happy to share a couple of things if you want to post them on your website or something.
Absolutely.
So I have a couple of Halloween resources that are, I think, a lot of fun. So one of them is called The Shy Little Monster, and it's a book. It's a book and it's a song. It was a song first. I wrote the song a couple of years ago and I released it to my Song of the Month Club. And it was kind of the song where people were all of a sudden started sharing, you know, these songs that I was writing for the Song of the Month Club. And it's about this little shy little monster and all of his monster friends who dress up in Halloween costumes. And basically he's like, you know, he says zippity zabbity flippity flappity bippity boppity boo. That's what he says in the song. And he gets gradually more and more confident over the course of the book until he and his friends are yelling zippity zabbity flippity flappity bippity boppity boo, which is really, really fun to do with preschoolers. They love it.
Uh-huh.
And So anyway, this a year ago, I kept hearing from music therapists and music educators that it was like their class's favorite song, you know, favorite song, their client's favorite song, and they asked for it like every single day. And so, and that it needed to be a book. So we turned it into a book last year. And so I have that book and that song, which I'd be really happy to share the MP3 and the guitar chords.
Yes. To. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then there's, I just wrote another Halloween song called I Love Halloween. Very creative title, Stephanie. But
but you wrote a whole song.
Yes. Yeah. It's really fun. It's a movement song. And it's not, I have to just say, it's like not a cheesy Halloween song. You know, it's really a fun, it's got a cool groove to it, and it's a movement song, and it's really engaging for kids. So I'll be happy to share that MP3 and the guitar chords for that one too.
Oh my gosh. That would be so, so lovely. And I feel like too, as I don't know, for Halloween, it seems like the one holiday where it's like, I could always use a good Halloween song. Like there's just, yes, there's so many opportunities for fun Halloween songs. And there's, I found like a few out there, but, you know, and written, you know, my own or whatever, and found some old, like, you know, old folk songs that you can use for Halloween songs. But I feel like new Halloween stuff is always awesome.
Yeah, that's what I found is I was having a hard time finding Halloween songs. So I decided to kind of write a couple. And also, as a kid, I was like very shy little kid. Yeah. And I'm still a pretty shy adult, but I was a very shy little kid. And so is my daughter, super, super shy, and like will hardly go trick-or-treating because there's like a skeleton on the house. So we have to skip that house, you uh-huh. know? And really wanted to make some Halloween songs that weren't scary mm-hmm. because there are preschoolers, and that any kind of mention of a skeleton or a witch or anything like that really spooks them.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make sure that this wasn't a scary song, so that it included even the shyest little kid in the class, you know?
Yeah. And I'm also a introvert. I'm a shy. I almost got held back in kindergarten for not talking. So, so shy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love talking with people, but I have to then have the equal time to like replenish and reduce
yeah, me
quietly.
Too.
Yep. but I love that, like when I saw your book, and I think it was on your Instagram where you were kind of showing some of the pages, or it might have been on your website, but just the validation of being shy and that it's okay. There's just not enough out there for that for kids. I feel like there's just, it's, we are such an extroverted culture, and we really, promote that all the time, and which is great. But then there's also just, it's okay to be shy too.
Yeah.
And quiet. And it was just so exciting to see that your book has that idea in it. I feel like it's just so validating for little ones who just might not be big talkers or might be a little bit more fearful. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you. I love that. So the illustrator is also very shy. And so, and introverted. And just, so of course we're like buddies because, you know, we relate to each other in that way.
Yep.
And so literally at the end of the book in our little write-up, it says that we are shy and we want you to know that you are, you know, you're really special.
Yes. Even if you're shy. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so fantastic. Yes. Yeah. It doesn't get said enough. And I know like with, what's the movie? And now I can't think of it, with all the five emotions.
Oh, Inside Out.
Inside Out. Yes. Yeah. Like with that, there is a lot more awareness of, you know, your emotions are all okay. It's okay to feel all these things. I have one of my feelings book, I think I forget which one it was, but one of them has shy in it. And I was like, yes, it's okay to feel shy. It's okay to be quiet. And, but it's just really nice to have that out there more. And I think too, especially, I don't know, I found this with working with little kids with music, you can, a lot of times you can see the kids who are quite shy. And then sometimes you see the kids who are quite shy, but not with music. And they're,
yes.
You know, and so it's always just an interesting thing, I think, to be thinking of too, as a music therapist.
Yes. And Yeah. And we could talk for so long, but something that like, I feel like we're kind of kindred spirits here.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something also like in my groups that I feel very, very strongly. So if you were to attend one of my music groups, you would be, people tell me they are shocked with how quiet they are. Mm-hmm. I have 25 kids and they are, I'm often speaking at a very low voice volume, mm-hmm. and we're moving at a surprisingly kind of slow pace, and they are just quiet. And one of my, you know, and I have to be really careful about those musical transitions and things like that, musical cues and everything in order to make that work. Mm-hmm. But one of my big target goals is I think it's really easy for those quieter kids to get lost in a big group setting of 25 kids. Mm-hmm. And just with my own experience of who I am, and then my daughter, who is a very quiet little kid, I just don't want to miss those kids in the group. And so it's really important to me that you know, if I see a kid kind of crumple a little bit in the circle, that my volume, even if it's already pretty low, like goes down even farther to make sure that they know that they are seen in that moment.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it is like, it's almost seeing when you are that kind of person or you can relate to that, and being in, I think the sensory experiences we experience yes. all the time are so overwhelming. And if you're a person who's already, I don't know if you've ever heard of the book, Highly Sensitive Person, HSP.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
so I really identify as one of those people of like, I just need to like have no input for a little while. And I think, you know, I think it's a great thing for every therapist to read a highly sensitive person. I forget the woman who wrote it, Susan Cain. No, that's quiet. I forget her name, but it speaks so much on those kids do get lost, especially in music. Music is so sensory. There's so much sensory stuff happening. And I know I pay attention to it because it's like, those are my little kindred spirits. So I'm like,
yes,
I see you.
Yeah.
And we can't always bring it louder. You know, stuff is always, you know, dance, you know, whatever, like there's different moments where I think other, you can, validate some of those more extroverted kids who need to get that big energy out. But I think sometimes those other kids get lost, the more introverted, quiet kids.
Yeah, they can. Yes. Yeah. And like you said, there are so many opportunities to bring the arousal level up. And I love to challenge those kids too, you know, by bringing the arousal level of the group up a little bit and then bringing it back down and just watching them and see how they respond. And it's amazing to see week over week over week that they can increase their tolerance, you know?
Yes. I always think of those kids when I did groups, there were like 10 in 8 to 10 in a group. So not 25. It's giving me anxiety. I'm sweating about it. I would always notice those kids. I feel like the assessment thing that would kind of stick up in my mind for the really kids who needed things a little bit quieter or had a harder time kind of doing something was when we were like passing instruments or, yeah. you know, even just the movement, you know, you kind of can just see a kid of just like, or, you know, if, we used to do like with turn taking, you know, there'd be one like really special instrument and then like beanbags or, you know, maracas, like not as everyone had something else and one kid had the special instrument. And like even seeing the growth over time of like the first week the shy kid had that instrument, it was like their solo was like
yes.
beats long. And then, you know, you could see them wanting more and then it was, you know, comparable to the other kids and that growth is so fun to see.
Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah. Love that too. Oh, shy kids. Got on such an amazing tangent. I love that so much. That's what it's all about. I will absolutely share the links to all of that stuff too in the show notes. So those will be available for everybody for the Shy Little Monster, the new Halloween song too. So another thing I love and love hearing about is people's passion project. If there's, you know, the thing that you're currently passionate about for if it's something you're currently building or something that you've built and it's just taking off, what is that for you?
Oh, gosh. I am passionate about multiple things.
Yeah.
I really am into right now just the music for kiddos stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm into like just creating things and growing things, and really into the community and just building kind of the resource library. That's been a lot of fun.
That is awesome. Awesome. And so helpful for the community to have a resource like that is phenomenal. Like we're in that age where you can get that, you know, where you can't, you know, I feel like, I don't know, 10 years ago, that stuff isn't quite as available, you know?
Exactly. And now it's literally like click and then you've got 200 resources to pick from. Maybe too many options. I don't know. But a lot of resources right at the tip. Right at your fingertips.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Your creative process of what drives you to create? Is there something, do you get like feedback from, you know, that something's working and you're like, ooh, I want to add on to that and I want to create? Or is it kind of something where there's something's missing, like you were saying before, with you're looking for these songs and they're just not there and that kind of fuels you to create? What is that process like for you?
Yeah, I like that question because I think I used to think that creativity came like a spark of an idea. Mm-hmm. And I have found over the years that that is not necessarily true for me. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes I'm like doing the dishes and all of a sudden this cool song idea happens, right? Like, but it's always like the unglamorous place, like when you're doing the dishes, you know?
Yep.
But instead of like what you imagine in your mind, like, oh, I'm walking in the forest and I have this amazing idea.
I hear birds singing.
Exactly. So inspired. Yeah.
Yep.
But what I have discovered is I just have to sit down and do it. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I mentioned I've got this Song of the Month Club. So I have to get a song out around the 15th of the month, every single month. And this is very good for me because I have to sit down and write a song. So what I'll do is as that deadline is approaching, I will sit down and I will say, I am writing a song right now. And I will not get back up until I write a song. And sometimes they are songs that I throw away. And sometimes they are gems that I keep. And sometimes there's songs that I need to tweak again later. You know, I just get a little idea. But that has worked the best for me beyond anything else. If I wait for inspiration, it's too rare. Mm-hmm. And I'm not able to create at the pace that I would like to be able to create. Mm-hmm. So I have found the practice of sitting down and just doing it really, really turns into a creative process in about, you know, 3 minutes if you commit to doing it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love hearing that so much. And it's an interesting thing because I think there is this concept of like creativity is like, it's like you're Snow White walking in the woods and the well and the birds and, you know, all this stuff happens and that's how songs come to you. But that resonates with me a lot too, because I'm somebody who, when I have a deadline, all of us, like when there's something at the end, the creativity just starts happening. Like
especially
to the end there. And I think that's like, it's such a great way to be creative too, because you're just working that creative muscle over and over again, and then it just gets better and better. And, you know, it doesn't mean every song or every intervention idea is a great one, but it gets you in that process. And I love that sitting down and like just doing it it's so awesome. I love that.
And sometimes what I do is I'll do like a songwriting challenge. I do these on my social media pretty regularly so other people can join in on them too. Cool. I'll do like a songwriting challenge. I'll do a 5-day challenge or something where I commit to writing a song mm-hmm. every day for 5 days. And a really crazy thing happens over the course of that 5 days. And it's the third song and the fourth song and the fifth song mm-hmm. that are the best ones usually. Wow.
Yes.
And it's because you get your creative juices flowing and because you get in the habit of doing that. Mm-hmm. I think it was Nickel Creek, the band. They had this game. They were on tour and they had this game where they would pick a title and they would all commit to writing a song every single day, and they would, it would of the same title. Mm-hmm. And they would come back and play it for each other every day. And some of their favorite songs came out of that songwriting game.
Oh, and cool.
Yeah. And I've actually done that with a songwriting friend of mine where we did once a week because it was kind of a lot to do it every day. But we did it once a week while I was at Berkeley. And so like every Thursday we would have our new song, and sometimes we would pick the craziest titles. Like one time I think I was being a little, I don't know, sassy or something. And I said, oh, we're going to do a song called Green and Yellow and Pink and Stuff. And that's what the title of the song was. Well, my friend wrote this song, and it's one of his best songs he's ever written because it's so absurd. And we ended up recording it, and he ended up releasing it. And it's just this really cool song that still, 10 years later, gets stuck in my head, Green and Yellow and Pink and Stuff. So that's another really, really fun way to get creative is to have a buddy.
Yeah. And the idea of generating, if it's random thoughts, I mean, the internet is full of randomized generators. Even if you're doing that by yourself, but I think it would be way more fun if you were doing it with people, but like challenging yourself with random titles of like, how can I write a song about that? And that just sounds so much fun. The more silly, the better.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we are just about running out of time. Before we go, there's two things. First, I always like to kind of end and wrap up, and especially we had, I think there was just so many awesome moments that you shared of hilarious eyebrow wiggling and so many really sweet, tender moments too. But I like to kind of wrap things up with like a therapeutic hooray that you have had in the past week or so, just a good moment or something that kind of filled your bucket in the past couple of weeks for you.
Let's see. Well, just like 4 days ago, or no, 5 days ago, I started my music groups for the year. And so I had all the songs that I had written over the summer that I hadn't used with a group yet. And I was so excited. I have this song called Just Dance. Mm-hmm. And I was really excited to try it with the kids. And so it has this part where they bend down with their knees and then they twist, 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 twist. And when they reach the top is when they get their instruction of like dancing or jumping or whatever. So it just goes, first you start down low and twist to and fro. And when you reach the top, just dance. Dun, 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 dun. So it kind of goes like that. And anyway, and I got to use it for the first time and I've been really excited. And just the look on the kids' faces, I had a feeling it would be a hit, but the look on their faces when that came, and I had some kids being like, this song is awesome. The kids I've worked with for 3 years, they're just like, yes, Stephanie, this is amazing. So I think that's definitely got to be it. Just that a little sparkle in their eye. Yeah.
And too, I feel like that's so cool that you were like, I kind of have a feeling this is one of the ones, like, you can get in and you're like, yeah, this will make them tick. And when it's a success, that's so, so amazing. I love that. And there is something really special working with preschool age kids that they just have that sparkle in their eye a lot. be there to witness it and to create it. And when you're the facilitator of it, it's just so fulfilling.
It is. It's so much fun.
Awesome. Well, Stephanie, before we wrap up, I'm going to have lots of links to your website, your newsletter as well, and as well as the songs that you had discussed and the book, The Shy Little Monster. But what about, can you let us know, is there anywhere else that people can get a hold of you? Instagram?
I'm Music for Kiddos on Instagram. Awesome. And that's probably the place where I am most frequently. I do lots of Instagram stories, lots of like, if I have like a random guitar tip or something like that, that I think of throughout the day, like I'll just go quickly post it on Instagram. And then I'm also on Facebook, and I post a lot of videos on Facebook about implementation. I'm all about implementation of these songs. Awesome. And those are probably the two best places to find me.
That's perfect. I will link to those as well. This was so, so awesome. I feel like we could talk for like another 5 hours about
yes, personal. Yes, I think we could. It was so much fun talking to you.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I did. It was so much fun interviewing Stephanie. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter if you're looking for the chords or the MP3s that Stephanie shared today. And also go check her out on Instagram and check out her website. She has amazing resources out there. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and be creative.